The time has come to get ready for the 2022 World Cup. And what better way to prepare than by revisiting the World Cup's most amazing goals? I'm Brian Phillips. I'm making a podcast about the history of the Men's World Cup, told through the stories of 22 iconic goals. The show's called 22 Goals. It's out now on the Ringer Podcast Network, and we're having so much fun.
This episode is brought to you by Mint Mobile. If you've had it with your overpriced wireless plan with its insanely high monthly bill and unexpected overages, then listen to this. For a limited time, wireless plans from Mint Mobile are $15 a month when you purchase a three-month plan. That's unlimited talk, text, and data for $15 a month. Wow, right? To get this new customer offer, just go to mintmobile.com/watch. That's mintmobile.com/watch. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first three-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for more details.
This episode is brought to you by Lincoln and the all-new 2024 Nautilus Hybrid, featuring a customizable 48-inch panoramic display, available Revel audio system, and available perfect position front seats with active motion massage. Oh my God, the world isn't wide enough. Visit Lincoln.com to learn more. Some models, trims, and features may not be available or may be subject to change. Check with your local retailer for current information. Lincoln and Nautilus are trademarks of Ford or its affiliates.
I need support staff to clear the room.
Stand up and walk. Now.
Hello and welcome to The Watch. My name is Chris Ryan. I am an editor at TheRinger.com, and joining me on the other line with his hand on the dial of destiny, it's Andy Greenwald.
Like levels to it. What if the dials of destiny was actually like village recorders? You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. And it's, right.
It's the Jack Antonoff documentary.
Only Steve Albini has that at Electric Audio. You know what I mean? Go back to the old ways. Andy, it's great to see you. It's Thursday on a gloomy day in Los Angeles, but it's not gloomy in the world of entertainment. Nothing but sunshine, nothing but takes, nothing but culture here. Let's talk about what we're going to talk about. Okay. I have an Indiana Jones trailer for you to discuss.
Yeah.
I have some other Star Wars adjacent announcements to make. Oh. Not personally breaking this news, but just to...
Wow.
I'm relaying these pieces of info that I got from Bob Iger. If we have time, I have a note. I wanted to ask you about a new movie studio or new movie production model that is being trotted out by Ben Affleck and Matt Damon. And then we were going to chat a little bit about the first couple of episodes of 1899 and the most recent episodes of Fleischman is in trouble. And let me tell you, folks, he's still in trouble.
Guys, you got to trust it. When people tell you who they are, and when shows tell you what they're called, believe them.
You know, I'm cheating a little bit because I already sent this to you, but I want to see a new energy from you this year. This year, meaning like going into 2023. And it is the energy of Boston Celtics head coach Joe Mazzulla when he was asked in a press conference, I think yesterday, how it felt to have the royal family in attendance at a Boston Celtics game. And Joe Mazzulla blinked once in about 45 seconds and said, Jesus, Mary, and Joseph, that's the only royal family I know. And they were like, no, the Prince and Princess of Wales.
No, isolate the audio of the reporter who gives 40 seconds of the most uncomfortable laugh that Celtics coach Joe Mazzulla wants no part of.
Yeah.
It's an incredible piece of video that I've been thinking about ever since you sent it to me. I have never once reacted in that way or believed anything as fervently as he believed in his response to that.
I want you to start. I want when I'm like, Andy, what do you think of family dynamics on Fleischman is in trouble? Jesus, Mary, and Joseph's family dynamics? Because those are the only ones I acknowledge.
My main concern, I want to be clear, is not Celtics coach Joe Mazzulla's religious passion, which I do not question or doubt. I don't think he knows what royal means. I guess Jesus was the king of the Hebrews.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. So there's some royalty involved.
Wasn't he the king of kings?
You tell me. Half of you tell me. I don't know.
Okay.
I don't read that testament. I'm going to do some research.
I'm going to do my own research and then we'll figure it out.
So you want me to stonewall you? Can I do one other note not related to Boston Celtics head coach?
Joe Mazzulla.
you guys know, like I'm a big feedback guy. You know, podcasting, not a one-way street. It's just a marketplace of ideas, and you know, things could fly back and forth. So I'm here for you, reply guys. And I did see one mention, someone dinging my Strange World take. By the way, we have given more airtime to this movie than the audiences of America did.
In the Walt Disney Corporation, yeah.
You're welcome, Bob Iger, yet again. But someone was like, you guys are wrong. Oh, sorry, you guy, Andy, yeah. Is wrong. Chris has no part of this. Chris was busy watching the Miyazaki movie he agreed to see at this moment. Because the reason it tanked is because you might not know this, but the children of America are sick at record numbers. And I just want to stop you there. Hold my Robitussin, okay? Do you understand that I have been living in season one ER for the last 30 days? Like, I know. You know what I mean? Like, those letters in the Civil War documentary where they're like, my dearest Edwina, no one will know of the troubles we have seen or the arms that have been removed.
Oh, imagine yeah. Someone when came up to him. Farewell, please? Yeah.
But someone come up to the person writing the letter and be like, did you ever stop to consider the gunfire? Like, I was made in the gunfire, okay? This is true. There is a wild kid pandemic happening right now that you might even hear a little echo of in my voice. But I don't think that's why Strange World failed. I don't.
If you're going to mention the reply, guys, can I also just say thank you to people who were hitting us up about us being part of their Spotify Wrapped this year?
Oh, yeah.
I thought that was really sweet. Thank you, as always, to people for listening to us. You know, I think thank we probably make this podcast for each other's entertainment, but we certainly appreciate everybody listening and engaging with it. And yeah, I mean, it's just always it's so cool to always to see us, see the little blue logo there with everybody else.
Yeah, except the people who listen to The Big Picture a little bit more.
Not like over mail.
Yeah. No, it is very nice. Thank you.
Should we do? Let's talk about Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny, yeah. Which had, I think, a surprise trailer release today. It was at like a Brazilian convention of Disney, or it was like I was not prepared for this.
Brazil Comic Con, which is where I drop all of my news, including my retirement from the watch effective immediately. I'm joining Coach Missoula's staff.
You're joining the royal family of JM and J. Anyway, look, man, there's another Indiana Jones movie. It's the fifth one. It follows up like almost like probably a decade or so ago.
It was Crystal Skull.
Crystal Skull. And this one's directed by James Mangold, who I have a lot of time for, directed Copland, directed Logan. He takes over for Steven Spielberg, which is still a strange thing to say because you would just associate Indiana Jones with like Spielberg. Like I would not assume that we would ever have seen a non-Spielberg Indiana Jones movie in our lifetimes, or specifically in his. It's called Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. I think that's a little bit of a mouthful. So based on this trailer, I'm going with you. You can either choose to call it Indiana Jones : Maverick or The Irishman.
Oh, okay. Great.
They are using de-aging in this movie to, I think, do flashbacks to different parts of Indy's life. But also, I thought that this trailer had Top Gun Maverick notes in terms of kind of a summation of both a life of a fictional character, but also a summation of the gift that Harrison Ford has given movie audiences over the last, I don't know, 50, 60 years now at this point. So what was your take on the trailer?
Well, I think there's a lot to like about it. I think the two main things to like are when something is taken over by fans of the thing, it can go any number of ways and you can't judge it from a trailer. But Mangold obviously is a disciple of Spielberg. He's older than us, but grew up with these movies. They influenced him. It seems to get the aesthetic details right, you know, even just the sort of like the buttery torchlight, like it looks like an Indiana Jones movie, which matters. It sounds and feels like an Indiana Jones movie, which matters. Thing number two is Phoebe Waller-Bridge. Of all of the guests who have appeared on the Watch podcast that I would like to be the de facto number two in an Indiana Jones sequel, I think she's my pick. And it's, I see Chris, this is an audio, but he's thinking about it.
I'm thinking about it. Watch guests that I would like to see.
Right.
I mean, RZA would be pretty good.
RZA would be good. Gail Simmons would be good.
Gail Simmons would be good. Yeah.
Okay. We'll circle back to this.
Okay.
Just that she is so uniquely great and bring something that is so specific. And I love the idea of her having a platform like this. You know, it's an interestingly put together movie because we don't know the plot.
It's about aliens.
Crystal Skull. Oh, so we know the plot.
Yeah, it's set in the
60s.
Well,
no, I'm just saying that like Crystal Skull was really bad, right? Like can we say that? Is that officially in the record?
Yeah.
And it was also so transparently like, he will have a son and the son will take over and then we will cast Shia LaBeouf as the son and we'll never speak about this again. This feels a little bit freed of that. I mean, who knows what Phoebe's character, what the relationship may be. I think they say goddaughter or something at some point. But it seems pretty slim, right? It's him, it's her, it's John Rhys-Davies, just who is, by the way, who I knew was alive and was just excited to welcome back.
One of your favorite
franchise
members of the royal family, John Rhys-Davies.
100%. And watch MVP, Boyd Holbrook, who
I can't
is just great in everything, particularly
the only person who loves Boyd Holbrook as much as I do is James Mangold, because he also has him in Logan, yeah.
But it just feels like, I don't know, there's just a momentum to this that feels like, okay, maybe we had a reason to do this. So I'm cautiously optimistic. I had a question for you. As a, you know, we run a two-man game on these streets of Hollywood. You know, I'm chatting it up in the suites, but you're in the streets.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? Like, you're out in front of the Chinese theater just taking the pulse of America, getting stuck in cement. Does Harrison Ford have a tax bill come due? Because the vibe of Harrison Ford for a long time, right, like post Random Hearts, like post I'm That Guy, was that he was fine, that he never necessarily wanted to be an actor. He was a carpenter, and now he didn't have to do this anymore. He was just going to fly his little planes and occasionally land his little planes, and that was it, right? And then the idea of him coming back as Han Solo felt like a, will he do it? You know, he's kind of grumpy, but he did it. And then all of a sudden, he's in this Yellowstone prequel that we talked about last week.
1923.
He's in. He did another indie movie, and he's the co-star of Jason Segel's new comedy for Apple.
Yeah, Shrinking.
Was Calista like, you got to get a hobby?
You have to ask yourself
landlocked?
Whether or not there is long-term liability from crashing your airplane into a golf course.
Yes.
And I
First
don't
all,
know
I
that we've really gotten to the bottom of that, but let me like pop the balloon here a little bit for you. He's been doing this for a minute. I mean, starting with coming back for Force Awakens, coming back for Blade Runner, coming back for Indy.
Oh, yeah, Blade Runner.
I kind of feel like this is a half-decade-long victory lap for him to some extent. And you know what? I can't blame him. I mean, it's not like... I think that dude has been relatively discerning over the course of his career to not do shit, which is why I have...
That's true.
...some trust that this will be good. I think he had no reason to make another one. Although I will say that I wonder whether or not a lot of these projects going forward, especially after Top Gun Maverick, but just in general, where you might make a successful franchise and then you must make the capstone. You know, like they will always make the let's do it one more time, a greatest hits montage. Send this character and this star off right, you know, and then of course they can break the seal and just go back, just the same way Hugh Jackman's going back to play Wolverine again with Deadpool and whatever. Like, I do wonder whether or not it's going to be more and more common to see these kinds of almost like reunion tours for bands, where it's like, we're going to play the greatest hits one more time, really soak it up. If you're in Philadelphia, if you're in Kansas City, here's your last chance to see this band, and then this is what it's going to be. But I trust in Harrison Ford. I just don't trust him to fly me anywhere, but I do trust him to make stuff.
I was going to ask this question, and I think it may be a little bit answered by the fact that, you know, a Banta tank or whatever fell on his leg when he was making the last Star Wars movie and he broke his leg, right?
Yeah, like he's like a sneaky Tom Cruise award for dying while doing the movie. Like,
yes,
Harrison Ford but breaks his legs a lot.
But what I was going to say, he does. But what I was going to say was, I wondered if it's gotten easier. Meaning the way movies are made now.
Oh, yeah, where it's just all digitized. Yeah.
Yes. So the demands on him, I mean, he's an 80-year-old man. The demands on him are the demands on him. I'm not, you know, but again, we're loyal subjects of, our President King, who is also 80 years old. He's the only royal family I recognize is Joey, Hunter, Jill, Hunter again. all the kings.
Oh, yeah.
No, but like, did it get easier? Like, we're not making this movie without you. So you will come to this set and here's how many hours you'll work and it'll be in front of the screen and then we can digitize X, Y, and Z thing. Like, in the same way that with a lot of legacy touring acts, I think you would ask them, considering the way they used to tour in the 70s, what it's like now, where you get on a luxury private plane and you fly to a city for 5 days and you go on stage with your band, but there's a secret second band behind
there's
the
like
screen.
The real band the in the shadows. Yeah, it's like, and now our touring musicians.
Wadi Wattel is actually playing all the music.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's just a question to ask.
Well, we'll get to the bottom of it. I can't think of two better guys to do this job is to get to the bottom of whether or not Harrison Ford is fucking, are you giving enough effort here, Harrison?
I brought the calipers. Can I just check the bone density of your legs? Like, it's just a question. We're just asking the questions.
Real quick, I wanted to just say Mandalorian is coming back March 1st, which is sooner than it sounds. And I, for one, I'm ready to get back to real Star Wars, you know? Enough with the politics. Enough with the revolutions. Enough with the dense world building. Get this fucking baby in front of me. Have him delighted by space travel. And then have this guy with a mask protect him. That's all I want. That's my pivot.
You're breaking news to me. Do you think Pedro Pascal is learning this news from our podcast?
He's like live from the Last of Us press junket.
It's like, oh, that's cool.
And Pedro, okay, you did amazing work on the third season of Mandalorian.
Okay, so I that is some news. Can I check in with you about another thing? I wanted to start this a few weeks ago, but now all of a sudden it's December. Can I take your Avatar temperature? Because, Chris, I don't know if you know this. There's an Avatar movie coming out in like a week, 2 weeks.
I'm starting That's not so to crazy. Trust my own ability to stick to my plans. So, my Avatar temperature is I'll go see Avatar relatively soon after it comes out. Maybe not like opening night, but I wouldn't be surprised to find myself there opening weekend. On the other hand, I might not. You know, like I just might not. And it's not anything against Big Jim Cameron, who I love, but I don't know. It's like sometimes you get into December and you just get real cozy. The hookah comes out. You know, you just want to like lie among your piles of books, get under a blanket.
This is such a good podcast. I just feel like people who tune into this podcast for the latest word on pop culture.
Fire up the Christmas tree and think about the real royal family.
Love hearing two 45-year-olds talk about all the stuff they're not going
to
see.
Are you going to go? You went on and saw Wakanda Forever. You have nothing to be ashamed of. You're out there on the front lines.
Thank you. And the answer has changed and it may surprise you. So first of all, don't tell me Strange World tanked because a couple kids had the sniffles. Disney can push the button and make a thing happen if they want to. This was a punchline, not just for us, but for many people. Like Avatar was the quietest, most successful movie of all time ever. Right? Like I almost can't believe it happened. It had no cultural footprint that I was aware of. Nobody talked about it. 3D didn't change anything. I don't see many young Na'vi out at Halloween. Of course, it's dark. You know, it gets dark earlier on Halloween, so maybe.
But presumably, they would glow, right?
I'm like, oh no, it's Mystique from the X-Men. Did you say presumably they would glow? Do you know more about their iridescent?
Well, because you have to be able to see in the depths of water, right?
I don't even remember water being an important part of Avatar.
You're going to have to get familiar with the way of water, my friend.
Exactly. So all of this is to say, I was ready to do that bit and be like, guys, before you started talking about getting cozy, I was going to be like, I'm just not doing it. I'm sorry. There are other podcasts. I'm not doing this one. And then the most important day of my life and podcast listeners' life, last Sunday when I took my children to see Disney's Strange World.
Holy shit.
Theaters.
If you say that one more time, I'm fucking firing you.
It's fine. I have an announcement to make in Brazil and I've got a plane to catch. There was a trailer for Way of Water and my children were hype AF.
Do they know what it was?
Yes. And my older daughter was like, I want to see Avatar. And all I could remember was Stephen Lang in a mech skeleton, like just firing guns. So I was like, I don't think you should.
Don't guys get like paralyzed and then they're like, but you can come back to like full, you can get back on the field if you wear this mech skeleton and jump into the Matrix here?
I believe so. I mostly want to protect her from Giovanni Ribisi. Like, she just can't see a Ribisi film until she's just old enough to just really understand the context. But
till it's time to watch Boiler Room.
Exactly. That's the first one. But I would, anyway, just to say, like, I had no idea. And even the younger one, who is not checking for any of this, thought it was real, like, was really into the trailer. So Big Jim may know more than we do, and the Disney hype machine is in effect, and people are talking about it, and they're even writing the articles about the thing that I was joking, that people didn't remember it, but guess what? They do. It's going to be a big hit. It's going to be a big hit.
It's a great prediction.
And you're going to see it. And you're going to tell me about it.
In all seriousness, I did want to bounce one more thing off of you today. So when the Iger counter went off on tilt, and we, you know, rushed to come talk about Bob Iger, I believe that was last Monday, right?
Yes.
It kind of overshadowed another bit of Hollywood news, which was that Matt Damon and Ben Affleck, in conjunction with Redbird, which is like a venture capital, are starting a company called Equity Artists, which is essentially in the guise of United Artists, a bunch of creative-led studio efforts over the years. American Zoetrope, famously a big failure for Francis Ford Coppola, although it was his dream to run his own studio. There have been a bunch of attempts by the creative talent in Hollywood to try and upend the studio monopoly and the current, like, sort of paradigm of how movies get financed and released. Right. A few years ago, I think if people remember, one of the most interesting but sort of quietly quit sort of adventures was Steven Soderbergh, who was like, I think we can reimagine cinematic theatrical distribution. I think it was with Logan Lucky he was attempting to do that, right? And it didn't quite work out. And, you know, the house always wins, it seems like, in Hollywood. But Ben Affleck and Matt Damon are going to take a shot at it. The first movie they're trying this with is their Amazon movie that's still untitled, that's about Phil Knight and the start of the Air Jordan sneaker.
Right.
The reason why I'm bringing this up is that I was watching, inexplicably, I watched like a 40-minute Ben Affleck interview at the New York Times Dealbook Conference. And first of all,
being childless is wild. I just gotta say, that's a crazy use of time.
Has a Neuralink of pure caffeine and nicotine. Like, that guy is always on. But he was kind of going into what this value proposition of Equity Artists is. And the thing that he kept mentioning is something that I've also heard Matt Damon talk about in the past, which is what happened when the home video market dried up, and why that's essentially why we don't get the Rounders, the Michael Claytons, the whatevers, like the 90s entertaining dramas and comedies that we kind of grew up on and that we love and that we talk about all the time, is that those movies weren't necessarily hits in the box office. They just had second lives on home video, whether it was DVD or VHS or whatever. And that the participation in the profits from those secondary revenue stream, like the way that actors or directors or whoever, producers, could say, okay, well, I know I'm going to make my money back here. That was what kind of prompted people to take more chances, to make more interesting, kind of maybe more adult fare or whatever. And that what they're trying to do is reimagine the financial paradigm, I guess, of movie making, so that everybody from the big name star and the director to down to the below the line craftspeople who work on the movies themselves, cinematographers, what have you, can also participate in the profits. Now, what happens, since they're still, as far as I know, Matt Damon and Ben Affleck have not reinvented DVDs, so I don't know where this quote-unquote secondary stream, I think a lot of what they're going to be doing is taking their goods to market and trying to get the best price out of a bidding war of the different streaming services or movie distribution companies that still exist. The reason why I do this very long-winded intro to ask you is, I know that there's...
Do you want me to join you in starting another paradigm-shifting production model?
We do it. It's the way of the water. We just release everything underwater. No, I wanted to ask you, because isn't this going to be also a major storyline and idea when it comes to the WGA's negotiations coming, which are coming up soon, which is like, we don't have there's no residuals anymore. There's no long-standing way to profit from our work after the point of release. So we basically get this upfront payment from a Netflix, from an Amazon, from a Hulu or whatever. This thing goes up. And then no matter if it winds up doing Seinfeld and Friends numbers or Terriers numbers, I get paid the same, right? And that going forward, one of the major kind of tension points in Hollywood and in the making of the movies and TV shows that we love are going to be whether or not we can figure out a way for people to get paid properly once their thing comes out.
Absolutely. I mean, I have thoughts up and down the line. Like, it's interesting that you mention Seinfeld and Friends, because I think this is generally known, but it is worth saying, the amount of money generated by those shows for people involved in them is staggering. But it's not just the amount of money, it's the opportunities to have made and to continue to make money, right? Because when they were on the air, they were made by a studio, and a network paid the studio for the rights to make the show, and people got their salaries and profit participation, et cetera, et cetera. Then when they made, you know, 100 episodes, they were sold into syndication. And those sales were huge. And then they aired not only new episodes and reruns on the original network, but then like twice at 5 p.m. on your local Fox affiliate or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And every time an episode aired, whether it was an original episode, a rerun, 1 in the morning, 5 p.m., everyone involved got a check. Everyone involved got a check every time it aired. And then since then, the value of these shows that people love has only grown. And so they have been sold and resold, whether it's Netflix or Peacock or HBO Max, again and again and again. These are golden geese, and they just keep flocking, right? It's wild. It's
remember
wild.
When we had Lori Metcalf on the pod?
Yeah.
And she broke down the like what it meant to be on Roseanne for us.
Yes.
And essentially, like, first of all, the schedule of working on it, but also like economically what it meant that she could do, which is essentially like, I could go do Steppenwolf for quarter of the year because of that.
Did you find it weird that she tipped us $500 each at the end of that podcast? We've never talked about that publicly. I thought it was
classy. But I never
classy.
Declared that. So maybe we should have Kaya cut that because I don't want the IRS.
But I just bring that up to say, like, the degree to which all of those revenue streams are closed.
Yeah.
Not just like a couple of them. They're closed. If you sell a show to Netflix, thank you for the check, Netflix. That's it.
Yeah.
It's done. It's not going anywhere else. You know, and I don't mean if you sell Friends, your previously existing show to Netflix, to air on Netflix as a second window. I'm saying a Netflix original like 1899 that we're about to talk about. That's it. And, you know, I know people love this. I'll say, like, the show I made was on cable. So when it was on, you get an additional check when it airs. And then it reran like thrice.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's on Freevee and it's on its second window, and that's it. So residual checks, which were not, I'm not talking like, you know, Jason Alexander level, but it's a nice thing for people in the industry.
Sure.
Who have had much longer careers than I have. You know, you have there's a little bit extra income at the end of it. So yes, that's all gone, and everything, people still get paid very well, but everything has tumbled down.
I legitimately don't know where Matt and Ben see what this extra, like, you know, I think that what they're trying to do is the Blumhouse model, which is, let's make movies with your fee up front being smaller, but your participation in the success being bigger, which is like when Jason Blum goes to Ethan Hawke and says, you do Black Phone for $500,000 or whatever the scale is or whatever he winds up getting. But when that movie makes $80 million, you make 30, you know, like,
I think, though, that what's lurking behind this, and I haven't really delved into the paperwork. Ben and Matt sent it to me late last night, so I haven't had a lot of time. But
well, it's funny because Affleck's CEO and Damon is chief content officer.
Oh, great. Wow. That's actually how I would do it,
but
too,
I think
for
the
what it's worth.
Position of CFO is open there if you want to go for it.
I'm like, who is it? Is it David Paymer? Or Kevin Pollak? Who plays Dave's friend in Dave who comes to do the government's books?
Oh, it's Paymer, yeah.
It's Paymer. That's me. Great movie, by the way. I guess the most interesting, like the very interesting thing that you referenced is that investing in a movie wasn't like investing in a restaurant. Like, people are always like, if you want to hang out with your friends, like, just, you know, maybe convert your basement. Don't open a restaurant, like, especially if you want your money back. It's just it's a good thing for the world, but it's an almost guaranteed money loser. And I feel like that's what entertainment broadly is now.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't used to be that way. And it isn't for everyone. I mean, that potentially negligent or criminally negligent guy who was making movies with Bruce Willis for like 40 a year, like there is still this shadow marketplace of like Wesley Snipes and Bruce Willis in Action Train. And, you know, then they sell it all over the world. You can make money back that way, I guess. But the return on investment is not what it was. So attracting people to invest and then be invested in it is very different. I don't know. I actually have one last sort of, I don't know if this is a real concern or not, but we all want those movies to come back. Mm-hmm. You know, the types of movies that we loved, that these guys loved, that gave them a different sort of career, because it wasn't always about first week boffo, whatever. It was just like, oh, I love those guys. Oh, look what I have in my life. Look what I'm rewatching. It's a different relationship with talent too when you engage with it that way. I don't know how many Rounders scripts are lying around anymore. Like,
I don't
there
know
always
either.
Are some. But
and this is something that I've been chatting with Sean and Amanda a little bit about this, like on and offline, but like you do wonder whether that's just the Bear, you know, and that there's a version that, of
yes,
there's a version of the Bear where you cut like two or three of those episodes and it's essentially Carmi's arc, you know, and it's that's a classic. We compared Jeremy Allen White to Dustin Hoffman before in terms of his look. Like that's a Dustin Hoffman movie from the 70s, you know?
The Bear was a movie. Chris Storer wrote it as a movie, yeah. And it turned into a TV show. And I would say the same is true about many of our favorites over the last few years. There are things that we're going to talk about momentarily about Fleischman that I adore, that I equate with cinema, that I feel like are things that used to... I mean, I said it last week, right? That these are like, this show is what movies were in 1982.
See, that's funny because I disagree with you.
Oh, what?
Well,
what?
I disagree with you that that's
Kaya, turn the TikTok camera on.
Yeah, I know, Kaya... What does that even mean?
I've never known.
Because they're on camera the whole time. I never know what
know.
That means.
I know.
Shout out to Bill. This episode is brought to you by Mint Mobile. If you've had it with your overpriced wireless plan with its insanely high monthly bill and unexpected overages, then listen to this. For a limited time, wireless plans from Mint Mobile are $15 a month when you purchase a three-month plan. That's unlimited talk, text, and data for $15 a month. Wow, right? To get this new customer offer, just go to mintmobile.com/watch. That's mintmobile.com/watch. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first three-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for more details.
This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Loom help power the collaboration needed for teams to accomplish what would otherwise be impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. That's why millions of teams around the world, including 75% of the Fortune 500, trust Atlassian software for everything from sports exploration and green energy to delivering pizza and podcasts. Whether you're a team of 200, or 2 million, Atlassian software is built to help keep you connected and moving together as one. This episode is brought to you by Empower. You got money questions like, can I retire early? What are my best savings options? Can I afford to pay for my kids' education? Luckily, Empower has all the answers. With Empower's real-time dashboard and real live conversations, you get clarity on your real-life financial goals. So join 18 million Americans and Empower What's Next. Start today at empower.com. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more. Sponsored by Empower, not an endorsement or a statement of satisfaction by a client. This episode is brought to you by Anytime Fitness. We're not all professional athletes, but we all have health goals. That's why Anytime Fitness gives you access to personalized plans and support from a coach. Plus, you can track your training, nutrition, and recovery progress with the Anytime Fitness app, just like the pros. With 24/7 access to more than 5,000 gyms worldwide, get more from your gym membership. Visit anytimefitness.com to try it for free today. Terms, conditions, restrictions all apply. See website for details.
Should we just start talking about Fleischman?
Sure.
So the four episodes have gone up. And I just want to say that I find this to be the kind of show where I'm like, if they wanted to make this season 22 episodes, I would be fine with that.
Yes.
And I don't find it particularly like cinematically challenging or, I mean, I guess like the idea of this guy having a midlife crisis and there's a little bit of a mystery is a perfect 2-hour and 15-minute story if you wanted to make it as such. You yes. probably wind up losing a lot of the Lizzie Kaplan and Adam Brody stuff where they become much more background characters in the sort of shaking out of the story, and it becomes much more like this guy he's dating, but he's also kind of concerned, and then he becomes very concerned, and then he's searching for his wife. But on the flip side of that, like in just in terms of like Toby Fleischman goes to New Jersey for the day, like that's an episode, and I'm like, that's satisfying. Like I if this was just like a long running HBO show that was like 5 seasons long, I would be fine with that.
I would too. I love the show. I think it's fantastic. I'll argue against myself to begin, which is to say that we didn't cover the third episode last week, but
yeah.
I thought that the space given to and the attention paid to the Rachel Fleischman story and the flash, it was essentially a long flashback of that, their meet cute and the early years of their relationship through postpartum depression and her success. You don't get that in a movie. And no. Frankly, what really struck me is you don't often get any of that in a TV show either. You know, I for me, the last lingering concern about the show was the version of Rachel Fleischman that Claire Danes was playing in the first two episodes seemed, I mean, she is severe. That's by choice. But seemed set up to be a villain, you know, in less capable or considerate hands. And seeing the arc of the character as a full person, as a full woman, and then also the time and attention paid to women who are, you know, dealing with very serious issues with the birthing process, with postpartum, I was really struck by it. And I also just have to say, Claire Danes as an actor, it reminds me of, remember, that we reference this a lot, listeners, sorry, but like those halcyon days when we would just sit around and listen to Wu-Tang Clan and play Perfect Dark on Nintendo 64, and you'd have like little handguns, and then from across, you know, a 16-bit parapet, you'd see a flamethrower. You'd be like, I wonder what that does. That's Claire Danes on the show. It's so, so wild.
Wasn't there a whole thing on that game where you could set off a nuclear device?
Yes.
But then your character would recover after a little while. Like, you'd have radiation, but then you'd have to like wait 45 seconds for it to go away.
I never saw it, but I believe that was the plot of the HBO maxi series Chernobyl. I think they're culled from the same source material.
Are you calling it HBO maxi now?
No, an HBO a maxi series, like not a mini series.
Oh, right. Of course. Yeah.
HBO maxi. Aw. That's so cute. I loved all that. But wait, but the bigger question about the cinema stuff. No, look, it's a TV show. I don't mean to say otherwise, but I just feel like.
You were saying some of its pleasures are cinematic in their conceits,
well,
right?
Yeah. I just feel like the attention paid to characters, their emotional life and the milieu and everything, like it just still strikes me as. It would have been adapted for the screen and it may have been good. You know, this isn't one of those examples of a book like Pachinko or something that like, you know, 20 years ago, Scott Rudin would have snapped up the rights and then sat on it for 20 years. Like, but it needed to be a TV show type of thing.
Right.
I think Fleischman could have been a movie because of the like just the emotional language that it uses, the currency it uses, et cetera, et cetera. Like I just think that that's worth noting. But as a TV show, I'm just really struck by it. I think that, there's a large record both on Grantland and on this podcast that maybe the thing that drives me the craziest is stuff like the late lamented The Slap, right? Which is just like, we're going to rip the Band-Aid off the real story of upper middle class people in big cities. And it's so unself-aware and so like lurid and gross. And like, there's this scene in the fourth episode when Toby Fleischman goes to visit Lizzie Kaplan's character in Jersey. Every single thing about his arrival at that house is perfect. It's perfectly staged. The business with the children, it's a Josh Radnor performance of a lifetime with like six lines of dialogue. The refrigerator door just opening. She's like, I'm doing the water bottles.
Playing aging.
Do you know how much of my life is doing the water bottles, Chris?
It's like playing aging indie rock dad is like, this is his Jake LaMotta part.
All of them. There's the scene when the two of them lie back at the country club or whatever it is. And usually when you see actors have to go, quote, you know, live the way of the water, basically, you know that they've been living the way of keto for 6 months and like putting a trainer in the line item of their contract. These guys were like, fucking finally. You know what? You know what this, you know what I want? Like they went into set and they were like, what do you, I want this body to say one thing, and that thing is, I listen to Wilco. You know what I mean? Like, it's just...
Late period Wilco.
It's just Jesus, et cetera, baby. Like, let's go. So, no, it gets those details, I think, so right.
Trying to look like a ghost is born right here.
in the right light, or in the wrong light. And then we talked about it with Adam Brody. I just feel like all of the actors on the show seem to be like, thank God there's no ping pong balls, you know? Like, it's just, we're just hanging out and we just be here. And I really
do you feel like
that.
It's an appropriate? So you're at episode. We're at episode four.
Yeah.
I think there are four. So we're really at the mid-season turn here.
Yeah, and he's not in that much trouble yet.
Feel
I know we said
like
that
it's an appropriate episode count. Like, I guess I mean, we haven't read the book, so we don't know where it's going. So we don't know whether it's going to feel like it's dragging or what. You know, what it feels inevitable about it or not. But
yeah, I don't know what the I don't. It's in a really good place, I guess I want to say, because if this was truly a murder mystery or adopting the rhythms of a mystery, we would probably have more notes about this, mm-hmm. about where we are with it. But the show does a very smart job of sort of continually raising the question, but then kind of punting the question and refocusing the question. And I think it ends up, the result of that is you saying things like you said, like, I wish this just went on forever. I also really appreciated that in the fourth episode, they chose a framing device. They chose a framing device of his 12-step process of, you know,
of getting over this sort of realization that she's with somebody else. Yeah.
Yes. And in so telling that, they changed the format of the show, and Lizzie Kaplan is still narrating it, which is a huge boon to the show. You know, there's the title cards for each stage of his process. But also noteworthy that when he went into his old apartment, you know, we see his nightmares, basically, mm-hmm. of who's that actor that's playing?
He's plays Sam Rothberg in everything he's ever been in. But I can't remember his name off the top of my head.
God, he's the guy with the chin. He's great. But I like the slightly formalist aesthetic tweaks that it's doing. But mostly it's just you know, it's in tune. It rings true in terms of the emotional lives of people roughly our age, I think. And I think that's pretty impressive. It shouldn't be impressive, honestly. It shouldn't be rare, but it feels rare.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's got a little bit of, you know, like some of the network, really well done network dramas that I'm sure like most people listening probably don't rock with. But like, I used to talk about this one show with Juliette Littman a lot of the Brothers and Sisters, you know, where it's just like,
oh, yeah,
really good, well done family drama with some good actors. You know what I mean? And there's an element to Fleischman that isn't the where's Rachel part that I think would be sustainable. You bring up a good
Can I just follow up on that? You're right. Do you remember the Herskovitz and Zwick shows?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
And specifically, there was a show that I loved, like one of the last network shows that I really, broadcast shows that I really remember just being super into was Once and Again.
Yes. Yeah. Right.
Which was, I think, probably best remembered, if at all, for Evan Rachel Wood's start of her career. But what was that show about? I don't know, just some people,
a family,
man.
Yeah. I mean, Parenthood kind of had that for a while, but Parenthood also was like, we will make you sob at the end of every episode.
Right.
But yeah. And then I think that what they're doing, you mentioned that's smart is, you know, it's to make this show work, Rachel has to be a mystery, but they are finding ways to get A, Claire Danes on screen, but B, show her character a little bit. You know, you could argue not enough, but it's always through Toby's POV. And then you also have the Lizzie Kaplan POV on top. You have the Libby sort of narration on top. But I agree with you that I thought it was good that they were due a Rachel episode, because I don't know if you could do 5, 6, 7 episodes of just him being like, I can't believe she cheated on me. Where the fuck did she go? You know?
Yeah, and it's also interesting. I mean, you don't get Claire Danes to do it if it's just one thing.
Right.
And so I think right. that's worth noting too. But I, you know, the show is ultimately, it's about our guy Toby. But the moments in the episode after the birth of their first child where she's just like, this is shown, it's not told. But no, it's both. When she's like, they didn't teach us how to do this, to play with the baby, to, you know. These are real moments that many people have lived with and have experienced, whether for themselves or people in their family, loved ones. And that stuff doesn't often get on the screen because it's spiky. It's disagreeable. It runs counter to people's expectations. And I liked the way the show did that.
You know what also doesn't always get on screen? Time-traveling steamship passengers. I don't even know if they're time-traveling.
Yeah.
Let's talk about 1899.
You're bringing a little dark into this, but okay, let's do it.
Well, that's my thing. As you go into 1899, it comes to us courtesy of Baron Bo Odar and Jante Friese. And forgive me if I didn't pronounce those names exactly right. And
partners in work and love.
And partners in crisscrossing CR's brainstem and electrodes. Because like it's just basically, you know, this massive tapestry of characters, multilingual international cast set in the titular 1899 year. They're on this ship from the old world to the new. It's a German-run ship that is owned by a British shipping company, which will come in later in the season. Now, I've watched three of these, so I'm sure many people who are like done or further into it are like, you guys, what about this? But, you know, they are on a ship called the Carabosse. They are going from, and when I say they, I mean there's the ship captain and his first mate and the officers around him. There's a like sort of tier of characters that are all supposed to be like upper crust, first class passengers. And then there is like in the, what do they call that in the ship? Where
steerage?
In steerage, you've got like working class people, mostly from Denmark.
For people who have only seen Titanic, this is where the Irish folk dancing occurs.
Exactly.
But there is no merriment.
They're not dancing. Ship. And they're just giving birth and wondering when they're getting to New York. And so they are on their way to New York. And then what happens is the Carabosse gets a signal from what it was believed to be a long-lost ship, sister ship in the steam line called the Prometheus. And the captain, who's played by a familiar face from 1899...
From Dark,
decides we got to go check out the Prometheus. I know it's going to take us off course. They go and everything ensues. It's got a little bit of a Lost style structure where every episode begins with a different character waking up essentially from a dream. And then the rest of the episode lightly circles around that character's storyline. So you find out why every one of these characters has found themselves on the Carabosse. But you and I were going into this with a ton of anticipation, and Dark is one of the most striking shows that I've seen in the last 5-10 years. So, and one of my favorite Netflix shows. What did you think of 1899 or what you've seen so far? You've seen two so far?
I've seen two, so we definitely will revisit once we know a little
bit
more.
And let's do spoilers for the first two, I guess, because it's hard to talk about it without.
Yeah, I think mentioning Lost is the right thing. It's interesting. There was a period of time when... before the real rise of the streamers, which gave us unfettered access to international shows like 1899, when the real hot ticket item in Hollywood was formats, right? So where The Office was the UK show, became the biggest comedy hit in America, and then was sold and resold all around the world. And I'm sure people are familiar with some of those versions. You know, it was in Saudi Arabia, it was in Germany. I mean, there were some became hits, some didn't. And maybe someone should write a book about why that was and all the different adaptations. That would be interesting. Free idea. Take it. This is a different iteration of that, where the success and concept of, broadly speaking, of Lost, or a Lost-type show, bunch of wildly different characters put together in a unique, potentially supernatural situation. The backstories of the characters inform the genre elements and vice versa. And hanging over all of it is a mystery, not just for the character's circumstance, but of, are these guys going to land the fucking plane? Or in this case, harbor the boat, I guess. That's a genre unto itself. We talked about this and we talked about Dark, which I think is just like, I know this is a French saying, but the ne plus ultra of time travel. Like,
yeah,
they did it. I'm not saying you shouldn't do more time travel, but if you do the time travel... like, I would imagine people on Reddit will talk about time travel. You're like, yeah, but what if? Yeah, that Dark's that guy.
Yeah.
It's the most Germanic in my broadly stereotypical understanding of it, iteration of a sci-fi drama imaginable. So this is what these guys do. It's a formula, and this show is very dark. Not just in color palette, which it is, or in lack of humor, which it also is, but the same kind of creepy screaming score, the same portentous looks, and the same feeling of this shit is happening whether you like any of these people or not. We have embarked, you know what I mean? And that is, in that, it is slightly different than Dark ultimately, because Dark did begin not hinged, but not entirely unhinged with some family stuff. And this one is just like, everything about this is a puzzle piece. And I think that's very suited to Netflix, but it might be a barrier for entry for some.
Yeah. I've been trying to articulate or put my finger on what it is that hasn't necessarily dampened my enthusiasm for the show, but makes me feel less enthusiastic about it than I did about Dark. And that may just be because Dark was like, in its own way, a little miracle. But the characters in Dark, at least in the first season, which is still my favorite, it only slowly dawns on them that this is happening to them.
Yes.
And before that, this is kind of like what happens in the first season of Stranger Things. They're just kids, you know, like they're just people going through their normal lives, unaware that something extraordinary is about to happen to them. And the characters on 1899 all seem to be aware that something extraordinary is happening.
Yes.
If that makes sense. So it's like you go into it, and whereas in Dark, you're on the same footing as most of the main characters until, of course, like, I don't want to spoil Dark for people, but until, of course, older versions of them start fucking showing up and being like, we have a centuries long battle between good and evil to get to. But in 1899, you're right. It's immediately like very somber. Every scene is very slow. Every scene is very like, we must, you know, it's very, very, very like kind of not stale, but serious. And all the characters know more than you do. All the characters are like, I have a secret, but you don't know it yet. But maybe you'll find out in episode 5 why I'm acting this way.
What's cool is that no one has ever used Jefferson Airplane's White Rabbit to like connote otherworldly happenings. So that's cool. You know, I just feel like I really applaud the international aspect of the show, but I do feel like they should bring a Hollywood consultant, Hollywood fixer, maybe you, honestly, to set and just be like, Baron, baby, Yanja, I don't know how to say your name, but this part, this has been done. Like, we've used this song before. Maybe we could go in a different direction
With White Rabbit?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, oh, we get it. Like, my feeling about this is, so I'm only 2 episodes in. I feel fondness for the show already because I like the thing that they do. I think they just are so committed to the bit, the way that it's directed, the way that it's art directed, the production design, the actors they get. It's a house style now, honestly. Mm-hmm. And I enjoy this because I enjoy it, full stop. But I also know, again, I am stereotyping them and I apologize, but it's like this is a dramatic attention to detail where I feel like they storyboard and block this. So it's not like they started episode 1 not knowing where they intended for it to go.
Yeah. There's no we're going to find it in the room. Yeah.
No. So there's a confidence going into it, which I think is welcoming. I also think sometimes you have to consider the box that it served to you in. And Netflix is absolutely the right home for this show, just like it was for Dark. There's just something about both what the service has grown to become and represent, but also the way people use it. That like, yeah, there's 8 of these and you just gobble them up. Like it's fine. I know this sounds like contrary to the way we often talk about TV, but I'm not sweating it. Enjoying some of the mystery. I'm enjoying some of the characters. I hope that not all of the characters' big secret is you think I'm Spanish, but I'm Portuguese, which in the era of the World Cup,
you thought I was a priest, but I'm not.
Yeah. I'm not a priest. Guess what? These racist dingbats think I'm Japanese, but I'm Chinese. Like, okay, cool.
Yeah.
Blow my mind.
You know, it's interesting. I was thinking about whether or not this would work, it's like to use your words in another box. And I do think it's probably too full to the brim to keep everything. I don't think I could watch this on a Sunday and then watch another one on a Sunday.
No.
It's a real, like, I'm feeling pretty tired. I'm going to watch like 2 or 3 of these. Very difficult show to get up and go grab a pretzel from.
Well, yes.
It's like, you get up and you're like, subtitles? This Cantonese lady seems incredibly upset.
Well, that's the other thing. It's like when the 2 Spanish guys are talking, I'm like, I could probably get a glass of water.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not trying to brag, but I could probably figure it out. Maybe a little bit with the French as well.
As a guy who pretends to be a priest in his free spare time anyway. Yeah.
Yeah. And a guy who pretends to live in Denmark. So I'm cool with those plot lines. That's fine. Can I ask you, Chris, like, if you found yourself living in this era in 1899, and for whatever reason, you had a passion for the sea, which you do actually. I believe you find it dope. What role on the boat do you think you would be best suited for? What job? Not role, not like person swanning about a stateroom. Like if this was your job.
I would definitely not want to shovel coal. I think, you know, on a lot of naval dramas, one of my favorite jobs seems to be the guy who stands in between the captain and yes. the dude who's steering, and the captain yes. goes, all ahead full. And then the other guy goes, all ahead full. And that's so all he has to do is just repeat the captain. And then every once in a while, we'll have to be like, you know, challenge the captain's authority on a moral principle at some point, you know, but more or less, your job is to repeat what he said.
You're a spliff star in this.
That's right. I'm the hype man.
So in on 1899, that role is played by a guy who looks like former NBC head Warren Littlefield, which is different than Teutonic Adam Driver, who is also standing in all of those scenes.
Yes.
But so far has contributed very little in terms of character. Thank you for asking me. I thought about this and I was like, what's something that feels, may be surprising to you, but feels comfortable, like something I've done before? And the answer is shoveling coal, because I was a blogger for a number of years. And
it's the same job.
I think it's essentially the same job. Someone upstairs is like, turn around. And you're like, okay, I guess I'm writing about movies now. Fine.
Do you want to discuss briefly, I guess, what was your reaction when you got to the end of episode 2? And there is a quick shot of a wall of televisions that obviously suggests a technology that was not invented in the turn of the century, turn of the 20th century. So what was your, like, were you kind of expecting that sort of side door?
I was patting myself on the back because the episode prior to that ends with the totally unnecessary and gratuitous murder of a young girl. Mm. So I was like, good job, Andy. You're not quitting the show because you have to podcast about it. Oh, there's more. And I was like, this is where the architect from the Matrix lives. That was my takeaway. No, I mean, it's an interesting question, actually, because is this show going to blow my mind? You know what I mean? Like, I don't know that.
Can your mind still be blown? Yeah.
Dark did blow my mind because time travel is a... we're all obsessed with it on some level or another, depending, even we like it in different flavors or types of stories, but Dark really was thrilling in the way it broke my brain, but also kind of felt like you were watching a TED talk from a mathematician, like somebody who had thought it all the way through for you. And that was just really juicy and compelling, even when it sort of leapt the bounds of storytelling reason. But this one, I'm like, does feel a little bit like Greatest Hits, in that it's like there's a mysterious language and tattoos and bugs and weird kids whose eyes snap open, and then also TVs. It sounds like I don't like the show, but I'm enjoying it. I wonder if it's going to blow my mind or if I'm just going to be like, oh, that was a fun little puzzle.
We'll find out. I hope
that's
we keep
okay
talking
too,
about it.
By the way.
So here's our programming slate for the next couple of episodes. So on Monday, I think what we'll do is do maybe the beginning of Slow Horses season 2, along with White Lotus.
Live from Brazil?
Yes. Live from the Dial of Destiny. And then Thursday, we have a special episode. You can probably guess it's going to be our year in TV 2022. We'll be recording that on Thursday and putting it up later on Thursday. And obviously, White Lotus then concludes the following Sunday, and then we'll hit it on Monday. So a lot of fun stuff coming up on the watch.
Those year-end pods are very long. Like, maybe we should say, like, maybe it'll go up Friday. Like, I don't want to kind of have to edit
well,
4 hours.
That would then require us to record another podcast on Thursday.
Oh, right. Because, FanDuel needs the content, right? So we got to...
FanDuel does not sponsor this show.
They don't?
No. You should listen. We have a bunch of wonderful sponsors.
Guys, meaning you listeners, Chris told me he listens to The Watch. It was very sweet. Were we in your Spotify Wrapped?
No, we were not. My Spotify Wrapped was completely poisoned by my wife's listening habits.
Yeah.
It's one of the most anticlimactic days of my year. It's just because, do you really think I listened to 7,000 minutes of Taylor Swift's Midnights? No.
No. Don't ever ask someone with children to share their Spotify. I mean, guys... Are the songs in the Lego Movie 2 surprisingly good? Yes. But you don't need some sort of algorithmic representation on Instagram to know that. Okay? It's fine. It's fine.
Thank you to Kaya for producing us. And thank you to Andy for appearing today. It was big of you.
I almost did it in my native Portuguese because I live here now. Also, I'm a priest.
Talk to you on Monday.
This episode is brought to you by Lincoln in the all-new 2024 Nautilus Hybrid, featuring a customizable 48-inch panoramic display, available Revel audio system, and available perfect position front seats with active motion massage. Oh my God, the world isn't wide enough. Visit Lincoln.com to learn more. Some models, trims, and features may not be available or may be subject to change. Check with your local retailer for current information. Lincoln and Nautilus are trademarks of Ford or its affiliates.